Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Hikamo podcast, hosted by myself, William, and co-host Hannah. The Hikamo podcast is all about helping you discover career options by sharing career insights from people working across a range of industries. Today, we are very lucky to be joined by a cybersecurity consultant who works for a consultancy firm specializing in network security. She is the co-founder of Matter, a tech community which is dedicated to promoting and widening the network of Russian-speaking women in tech and related industries. She is also the host of the Matter podcast, which is supporting young women in Kazakhstan with their personal and professional development. And they have released over 50 weekly episodes to date with more than 15,000 listeners. Please join us in welcoming Akmoral Abdiyeva.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Akmoral. Great to have you on the show.
Thanks a lot for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
Likewise. So today we want to talk about cybersecurity, find out a bit about yourself, how you got into cybersecurity, and any other useful advice that you think our listeners will find useful exploring careers in that space, also in tech, because I know you do a lot around tech, and also touch on your podcast. I'm going to hand over to Hannah now. We're going to play a game of two truths and one lie, but also got quite a few questions to ask. So I'll hand over to Hannah.
Yeah, so go ahead. So could you give us two truths and a lie, and then we will guess which ones are the two truths and which ones the lie?
Yeah, sure. So fact or lie number one is that I am running an ultra marathon this year. The second fact or lie is that I was born in a town that had practiced a nuclear attempt during Soviet Union. And the third fact or lie is that I have finished 7 years of musical school.
Ooh, wow. This is hard. Yeah. This all could be real.
So ultra marathon.
I'm going to go with the first two are true and the last one's a lie. What do you think, Will?
I reckon when I did my research, I'm not sure I saw anything around music. Ultra marathon's tough though. What do you have to do as part of the ultra marathon?
Ultra marathon is a 100K running race.
Wow.
Okay. How long have you been training?
5 years.
Oh, she might be a good liar, or she might be terrible.
I'm gonna go for the nuclear one. I think that's so random. I don't think you'd make that up.
Yes, it's too precise.
Yeah. I'm gonna go that the lie is the 7 years musical, just because I don't think I saw anything on your profile.
Do I reveal it now or in the end?
Reveal. Go ahead.
Reveal.
So. The first one is a lie. I am running a marathon, but not the ultra one. I'm running this 42K. And the second and the third one are true.
Okay, awesome. You got us. You're the winner.
Nice.
What instruments do you play?
Piano.
Awesome. Awesome. That's amazing. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to jump straight into the questions basically around your career. So we just want to start off by asking you, what is cybersecurity and how did you get your job within cybersecurity?
Yeah, sure. So in 2018, I was graduating in the UK with a degree of mathematics. And as an international student, I was not able to just get any random job. I needed to prove to the Home Office that I am a competitive employee, and I needed to get a job that would potentially sponsor my work visa. And I was on the crossroads when I was choosing between applying to like any corporate style job, like in Big Four or something around that. But my heart was not in there, so I never wanted to jump straight into corporate world. I wanted to try myself in a smaller organizations, and that's what I was doing during all my student years. I was just doing different types of internships in different startups. So I needed to find a loophole how to get sponsored visa, but at the same time, like find a job in the UK in another corporate world. So with my mathematics degree, there were a few options. Like when it's an advantage and disadvantage. So when we started the math degree, everyone kept telling us, oh, math is applicable everywhere. You can go literally anywhere. But when you're graduating, it's a disadvantage because you can go anywhere, but you do not know where to go. So through a lot of research, I realized that cybersecurity might be an option. So it wasn't a like a natural hard following path, but it was a logical way of after mass going into cybersecurity managing to get the visa. And I had an interest in that field, but I did not have any experience. So luckily enough, I found my current employer, which is a small organization, and they kindly sponsored my visa. So here I am in cybersecurity world at the moment.
That is awesome. Awesome. So as you mentioned before, you said that you didn't want to work for, let's say, the big four, or like a big corporate company.
Yeah.
Well, and just to define, the big four is the top four accountancy firms. So that's KPMG, EY, Deloitte, and the last
PwC.
One, PwC, yeah. Exactly. Just for our listeners that may not know. So what deterred you from going into the more corporate side?
Deterred me is basically as an international student, I was in the like in the groups of a lot of international students as well, same like me, and most of them were going for the big four because it was the first thing that international student would try and apply to, because they would make you a visa easily. But the reason why I didn't want to go there is because I heard a lot of stories when you just like literally leave at your work, you don't have any work-life balance. Most of those people hated their jobs, and I didn't want to do something that I hate. And but they were in a situation where they could not quit because they were tied in with the visa. So I didn't want to find myself in that place. And secondly, generally, I didn't really like the corporate world, just because when I was looking into the application process, it is so heavily on the stages. You have to do different tests, you have to do different, like the whole days of the competitions between like hundreds and hundreds of applicants. And I thought, I know my worth and I know that I can go there, but I do not want to try the luck of literally like being like my the whole life being on the spot just because of someone else's mood or just the number of applicants. And I thought this is quite heartless, like to go through all of that application and putting all your eggs into one basket. So by all different components of evaluating this particular choice of going to corporate or not, this was a no for me.
Okay, yeah. It seems like you made the best decision then, definitely. Yeah. So in terms of, as you said, obviously the more corporate sides, the application process is quite lengthy. So to get your role within cybersecurity, how do you acquire that role?
So obviously the interview process was a little bit easier than I would go through in the corporate world. I consider myself quite lucky because the person that was interviewing me at that time, she has become my unofficial mentor and like a guide throughout my career. Unfortunately, she has left the organization, but she still helps me a lot. And when I spoke to her, we had a really good conversation and she saw in me a good consultant. And I think the reason why she did that is because prior to applying there, all of my experiences were to do is like marketing and not sales, but like business development-ish type of experiences. And that's one of the bonuses of speaking with someone from a small organization, because she had the time and she had the will to actually see something in myself, rather than if she had like 1,000 more applicants, she wouldn't be bothered to like look into my heart and finding something worthwhile in it. Eventually, the funny thing happened. By the end of our conversation, I was actually quite demotivated because I said, look, this is really complicated. This is very tech savvy. I don't have the IT experience. And she started like trying to persuade me to join them because she was like, no, you're a good consultant. You need to join. I can see that you're smart. I think we need to hire you. And and after that, I had the next round, which involved a technical interview. And the technical interview, when I came there, as I mentioned, I did not have much experience. And I came there and I spoke to the director and told him straight away, look, I'm going to fail this test. Like, maybe we don't waste neither mine nor your time because I'm going to hit zeros. I just want to make sure that I chose the personality that I am. Like, I studied mathematics, I'm very hardworking, and I can be very competitive because I need to be competitive to be able to stay in the UK. So throughout the whole process, I was very honest, but I managed to show my employer that I am worth their time to be spent on me because I needed to go through all of the training. And I guess I managed to do that.
That's incredible. That is incredible. So on a day-to-day basis, then, your role as a consultant, what does that entail?
So my role currently is a consultant slash engineer, I would say. It involves a lot of hands-on work. So at the moment, in my current job, basically, I get customers, and it can vary from small organizations to very large organizations. And when they come to us, they come with a set of requirements that they want to achieve within their product softwares that they currently use within their infrastructure. And we mostly try and work with those requirements and try and implement all those configurations that they require. It can be very hands-on, so basically working with the backend, like command line, programming, scripting, but it can be as easy as consulting, just like going through their use cases, talking them through. So it varies a lot from being very technical to being not that technical.
Just to go back to basics, are you able to give a definition of what cybersecurity actually is and what it includes? Just because some of our audience won't necessarily have come across cybersecurity before.
Yeah, I guess, it's really difficult to define what cybersecurity is, especially as a person who is within cybersecurity. I just want to give the heads up from the very beginning that my current job might seem like it's a very specific category within cybersecurity. So we work with specific vendors that are used for analyzing data within the company's infrastructure. So we work with the data and make sure that it is secured and it is properly used by the organization in order to flag up any potential threats. But yeah, cybersecurity is basically security within the internet. So making sure that all of your data is secure, all the transactions, all the websites that you visit are secure. And there are, as I said, it's very complex field to just give one definition because at the moment you might, like within the past year, I think all of the people, even those who are not very related to cybersecurity, have seen a lot of news, a lot of like breaches, ransomware breaches, especially, like it's very popular right now, and they started to understand more a little bit what cybersecurity actually entails. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's just making sure that the individual or the organization is safe and the data that this individual produces or consumes is safe and non-malware, let's say.
Yeah, okay, cool. So effectively keeping devices safe from damage or threat from And are there any tips that you would give to individuals in terms of how to keep their devices secure from cyber hacks?
Yeah, sure. I mean, maybe we will cover this later in this interview, but I just want to make a note that all of this cyber hacks or ransomware issues, a lot of like breaches that happen. I don't know if you saw yesterday, for example, the breach from the guy in North Korea. Like he stole a couple of hundred millions, I think. And all of these breaches or ransomware that happen, they might sound like, oh my God, this was like probably like a very hacky, I don't know, whatever. Like it's very complex. But at the end of the day, it's not that complex. Like all these breaches happen for most of the cases for the reasons of people not being quite vigilant. And there is a lot of like social engineering happening. And some of them are very, very simple. It's just the combination of a good timing, being quite smart and sneaky and stuff like that. But most of them are just social engineering. So at the moment, I think there are a lot of social engineering happening on the phones. Like you always get the calls or messages, like today I received 3 messages saying, oh, your Hermes parcel, we tried to deliver it, but we couldn't. Click here to rearrange. Obviously, tip number one is don't click on anything. Tip number two probably would be get yourself a password manager. There are a lot of tools online, and I think there are free ones as well. Just making sure that you don't reuse single passwords for anything, and try to use the multi-factor authentication whenever possible. At the moment, all the like your emails and all your accounts can be secured by 2FA or MFA. Try to use secure browsers. And I think there is one called Signal. There is a messaging tool called Signal, and there are quite a few search engine optimization tools like GoDaddy or Go something like that. I can send you the links after that. And small things like that, you won't believe it, but they can save you tons of headache later on. Just like being vigilant, not clicking on anything, securing everything properly, and not sharing anything anywhere. Like, don't send your passwords in clear text. When you're sending some files, if they contain any information that is very important to you, like your bank statement or, I don't know, something to do with your passport or personal documents, just try and use like password locks when you send it via email and things like that. Yeah, just small steps can save a lot of money and time.
Great, thank you. That's really helpful for us and for the viewers.
Yeah,
for everyone. Thank you so much. Someone. Cheers.
Thank you. Postgrad, you had a background in mathematics. So like you said, within your in technical interview and whatnot, you obviously didn't have the tech background. So how difficult was it for you to learn that and become quite hands-on with that? How difficult was it for you to adapt?
If anyone who is an undergrad, for example, now who's graduating and considering going into IT world, but do not have the skill set to do so yet, I just want to say that most of the companies have a period of 3 to 6 months that would allow you to start your job, but like get 3 to 6 months worth of training. So if someone is worried about that, I want to like reassure them that they will still have time to get enough training. So when I joined organization, I had about 5 months to get myself trained up. So it included getting trained in Linux, getting trained in the vendors that we consult in. So when you consult in specific vendors as a partners, you're supposed to get up to a specific level. So there are different levels like sales representative, consultant, cloud consultant, etc. During the 5 months, I went through all of those training and also did a vendor training. It was quite difficult in terms of actually knowing what I don't know, because I think this is the thing where you can like fall into a trap when you do not know what you do not know. Yes. And it's a matter of actually being honest with yourself. And when you think that you are missing on something or don't understand what you don't understand, is actually seeking for help. And this is where the fact that I was in a small organization actually helped me a lot, because as a team of 20 people, we were like 20 of us were consultants. So I had I had direct access to all of them without actually being worried of them not responding to me because they might not know me because we're different teams or something like that. So we were in the same office and I could reach out to anyone. So my colleagues helped me a lot. And also the fact that there were a couple of new entries, we were in it together. So we were helping each other. It was very difficult in the beginning because most of the people that also just joined, they had at least some IT background and I didn't have any. But I think I learned a lot to ask for help, because that was difficult for me in the beginning. I felt quite shy, but when you actually need the help, you need to go and ask for it, because no one will know that you're struggling unless you tell other people. So probably one of the best advices that I would give myself back then, and I would give to anyone that is currently going through the graduation process, is ask for help, because no one will help you just because they think you might help.
Yeah, they can't mind read.
Yeah.
You touched on this slightly as well, but you said there was different levels. Are they the different qualifications that you need to become someone that's able to work in cybersecurity? And if so, what are the specific qualifications that you need? And do you need a degree?
I think cybersecurity is one of those industries that you do not need a degree in, and you don't even need a degree in computer science or something related to IT. If you have an interest in the industry, you can enter it, because you can enter it simply on your your ambitions and will to work. There are some basics that you need to know, but you can literally cover them with any online courses that you currently have. There are thousands of them online, something like cybersecurity basics or network security basics. And this will give you a head start. Some additional bonuses in terms of certification that some might find useful is the CompTIA Security Plus. It's not that complicated, but it gives a very solid base for those that want to position themselves within the industry. Another probably useful tool to know is Linux, that most of the OS is done on. The Linux is one of the most highly used operating systems within the IT. So having skills in Linux would help a lot. And the levels that I mentioned are specific to vendors. So the vendor that we are mostly working with is one of the leaders in cybersecurity. It's called Splunk. So it's a data analytics tool. And within Splunk, you can be like, at that moment, they currently changed it, but you could be like, SEC1 and SEC2. So SEC1 is like an admin and SEC2 is like super experienced consultant with like 2 years of experience or something like that. But you can make it within a couple of months. Like I managed to get SEC2 in 5 months with the help of my colleagues.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So if anyone is interested in cybersecurity, I would say look into like any basic cybersecurity courses that you can find online. There are knowledge sharing like platforms with video courses like Cloud Guru, Pluralsight. What else is there? Udemy. They're very useful and they're not that expensive. So with a budget of £100, you can get access to very good courses and just get some solid knowledge.
Awesome. Thank you. So in terms of if you go back to your university experience, did you learn anything valuable while you was at university? And I'm aware as well that you did a master's. So you have a degree and you have a master's as well. So how did you find those useful and what did you gain from them?
Well, from the perspective of person who studied maths, I actually found it very difficult. So I think UK's education system lacks a bit of, I don't know what it lacks, but basically I also went to high school here. So I did sixth form A levels. So when I started A level sixth form, I did math and further math. And by UK standards, it's considered very difficult. But with my background that I have done in Kazakhstan, it was very easy for me. But when I came to the university, I found it extremely difficult. So there was a huge gap between what we studied at A levels and what we studied at university. And I think it's a problem of the education system because the way mathematics is generally taught is not very involving in terms of showing students what they can actually do with mathematics. It's purely taught on the scientific, some theories, some like terms, etc. So I really loved math, but when I came to study it at university, my love like literally downgraded a lot. And I learned I learned good concepts, but I think what generally university gave me is a discipline and the skills to solve problems, because this is what math is all about. So in mathematics, there is no, especially in the advanced one, there is no one way to solve a problem. Sometimes you solve problems that don't even have the solutions. It's just a matter of trying different ways, applying different theorems, different, skill sets to try and solve something. So I think this is a very good skill, especially now in cybersecurity, because when it comes to troubleshooting, you don't actually know what you're troubleshooting. You don't know where the problem might lie in. So a skill of trying and looking at the problem from different angles, attempting different ways to solve it. This is, I think, what I got from my degree mostly, but any applicable knowledge, I don't think I'm using anything that I've actually learned applicable at university.
Oh, and what is troubleshooting, by the way? Could you just
Troubleshooting is when you are at customer side and for example, server went down and the software is not coming up. So you need to find the reason why this is not coming up or why the problem is there. So basically, there is a trouble, there is a problem, but you do not know what is the root cause of that problem. So you're trying to find the different reasons of why this trouble have occurred. And you're looking at different things that might have caused that problem. Basically, this is called troubleshooting.
Awesome. So as you said, the fault in the degree system is that there's no application of the mathematics. So hopefully someone that's listening to this, hopefully they'll apply some application. So in terms of your day-to-day role of consultancy, what key skills would you say are required for your job?
I think as a consultant, you need to have a, first of all, as any consultant, not only cybersecurity, you need to have thick skin, because you never know what type of customers you might get. Sometimes it can be difficult to work with some people, especially now when you're working with them remotely, you don't have the ability to make that connection when you're actually at customer site, and not receiving everything like too closely to your heart is one of the skills that any person who wants to be a consultant need to have. In terms of specifically in cybersecurity, I think the fact that you need to be able to think outside of the box is very important, because when you're actually having a problem, you need to be able to be imaginative and virtuous to like find the problem or find the potential solution. Discipline is also very important, because cybersecurity is the industry that evolves every day. There are new viruses, new malware, new type of hackers every single day. So you never know what can occur tomorrow. So you need to make sure that you stay on top of the recent trends within the industry, and you need to keep studying, keep working on different certifications, upgrading your skills, upgrading your knowledge. Since I've joined cybersecurity 3 years ago, I don't think there has been a month when I did not actually study anything outside of my working hours, because there's always something that you need to work on, need to develop your skill set. And I think that's great. I mean, that makes sure that your brain doesn't die early. So
it keeps the job interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
It's constantly changing.
And what else? What can I say? Yeah, and I think just When you are a consultant, especially in the IT world, as a beginner, I always thought that I need to know everything, and if there is a problem, that I need to know how to solve it, because if the customer asks me, I would like be like shrieking and I wouldn't know what to say. But just knowing the fact that no one knows everything helps a lot. And that comes, I think, with an experience. The more you work with the customers, the more you realize that. And it's okay to say, I don't know. But it's important to follow up. The I don't know is I will find out and get back to you.
Absolutely.
Within, I don't know, whatever given time frame. And the ability to actually find the answers out, if you do not know how to find the answers, reaching out to your colleagues or to someone else, just asking follow-up questions from the customer is also important. Like just doing something to make sure the situation gets better is important. So I think that's also important. Yeah.
Awesome. So you touched on it slightly, but so you working from home, how has that made your job more difficult, or has it made it more easy? And which do you prefer, being in the office or working from home?
So the traveling aspect of consultancy, I enjoyed, because sometimes you would get sent to nice countries in Europe and everything is paid for. Obviously, this is some of the perks of the consultancy job, but there were some downsides to it when you are being sent to a very lengthy project. So I think the lengthiest project that I was sent to was 5 months, something like that. So I had to travel back and forth between London and the customer, but it is what it is. It was good in a way. So I miss traveling, and I miss making those connections with the customers, because when you're just like on the laptop, sometimes you don't even turn your camera on, and like you can deliver a project without even knowing how your customers look like. So that's a bit weird. But the thing that I don't miss about working at the customer side is the fact that the time consumed for your travels can be quite lengthy, especially if you're traveling within London. Like London is huge. I think the longest that I had to travel one way was like 2 hours every day. So I would spend 4 hours to go to the customer side once. Yeah, commuting time is one of the downsides that I don't miss, but it probably is the only one. And yeah, I mean, sometimes it's difficult to make connections, and the arrangements that you can work with sometimes, it can be tricky, because you never know what the regulation the customers have. So they might not be willing to share screen or give you control, and you need to find a way to work around it. But yeah, I mean, awesome. It's okay. I didn't have to like get used to it, because from the day one, my working arrangements were different, like sometimes from the office, sometimes from the customer side, sometimes from home as well. It was an option before COVID. So when I had to adjust to working from home, it was like just another arrangement that I had to adjust to.
Awesome.
Are you likely to go back into the office, or so will your company shift to full-time remote, or because you work so closely with clients, I imagine you'll get back to business as usual fairly soon?
Yeah, so just generally we had a smaller office because some proportion of our consultants spend time at the customer office, so they don't need a dedicated space in our organization's office. But I think we will, as our company, we will just continue that, because before that, some of the proportion of consultants had to work from home and proportion had to work from the office. So we'll be just shifting that around after everything goes back to normal. But yeah, once the customer's ready, we'll have to go inside as well. So, yeah. But I honestly do not see this happening this year, maybe towards the end of it.
And surely it's a lot more cost effective for you guys to continue to work from home.
Yeah, it is very cost effective. And actually, my other colleague, we are working on the sustainability goals within our organization. And we are making a proposal in terms of what the customers are actually saving when they are not asking us to come on site. So like the carbon emissions, like how much there is a CO2 emissions when you fly, when you like stay at the hotel and things like that. So we are trying to be green and stay at home.
That's really interesting. And that's a good kind of way of looking at it as well, because I know a lot of clients will probably want to see the consultants on site because then they feel they get what they're paying for. But actually that is a really important factor that people need to consider, well as the time that it saves you personally, how it saves the environment. So yeah, thanks for sharing.
Yeah, I think before COVID, if COVID didn't happen, I think it would be very difficult to persuade customers to do that. But now they've gone through it and they know that the quality of the service they receive does not depreciate. It remains the same, but it is also cost effective for them and better for the environment. I think since COVID happened, customers are more likely to change their opinion.
Yeah. Plus, it opens up opportunities. If people are able to work remote, it opens up a lot more opportunities career-wise in terms of workforce as well. So, for example, you know, you could work in Kazakhstan, but for a London-based employer, but still be able to deliver the same effective output for clients and for your employer, but then be closer to your family. So you're really important for international students. And that's one of the things we wanted to touch on today was around the advice you'd give to international students that are studying in the UK, that are then seeking employment and having to make that decision. Do they go back to their home or their country? Or do they seek work with a UK employer and try and do that remotely?
Situation with immigration has changed, and the students that are graduating from, so if they graduate this year, basically they from starting from this year, they will get a 2-year visa in order to get some job experience or find an employer that would sponsor their visa after 2 years, after this visa expires. So their situation is much better now. This type of arrangement was before, like it has stopped in 2010, I think. So I fell into that group of people that was quite unlucky. But now the students are back to being lucky again, so they can get a visa. And I think it's important to adopt a thinking of, you can always go back home. So you are always going to have an option B, even if you like try every single thing that you can try in the UK, even if you fail at every single one of them, you can still go home and this will be your safe option. This is the methodology that me and some of my friends had adopted. We decided to try everything that we can here. And even if we fail and won't get an employment visa, we can go back. And I think that was very useful in terms of you always feel safe, but at the same time, you want to try the maximum of your abilities. But the very good advice that my friend gave me when I just arrived in the UK in 2012 was, do not waste your summer holidays. And since she said that every single summer after my university, during my university, I always try to get any type of internship, even if it is unpaid. because the more experience you have, obviously, the more chances you have to be employed. And I think this advice falls not only to international, but also to local students and to international ones. What else can I say? At the moment, it's much easier for them, especially with the Brexit as well, because more companies now are obtaining the license to sponsor the visa, because they will need to issue a visa for the EU employers as well. So now it's a completely different scenery, and I think international students are at a way better position than I was back then.
Excellent. Thank you. That's really helpful advice.
So I just wanted to ask you, what is it like to be basically a woman working in the tech background, cybersecurity and consultancy sort of background?
It's quite difficult. I always laugh at how many times I've been addressed as Mr. Abdieva when people don't see me and they communicate via emails, assuming I'm a male.
Wow.
So that always makes me laugh, but it's a hard truth of the IT and especially cybersecurity world. A couple of months ago, when I was looking into statistics, the percentage of female graduating from computer science was 25%. And you can assume that cybersecurity is even less, because it's not as common as computer science at the moment. But it's quite difficult. And even within our organization, for the past 6 months, I've been the only female consultant, and we recently hired another female consultant. So there are two of us now.
Wow.
Yeah, you just get used to this industry being dominated by males. But at the same time, I always wanted to make sure I make my contribution and try to help other female to feel more comfortable within this industry. That is the reason why we have tried to create monthly meetups. Obviously, because of COVID, we stopped doing that, but we try to empower them. And if there is anything that we can help each other with, we try to communicate that. It's just another normality that you sort of accept. And even when you go on different events or different trainings and things like that, you just assume there will be at least 80% of male and 20% of female if you're lucky. We are also within our organization, we are currently, me and my director, we're looking into ways what can be the steps that we can do in order to attract more female. And when I was doing my research, I stumbled upon a lot deeper problems that it might occur from the beginning, because you just assume there are no females. But when you start to actually think why there are no females in the industry, you understand that a lot is to do with what the companies offer within their maternity package. Because when you're a consultant, you can only work as a consultant up to a certain age. So let's say if you are in your late 30s and you're a consultant and you have decided to have children, after you have children, you cannot be a consultant anymore, because the lifestyle of a consultant does not suit a lifestyle of a mother. You cannot dedicate time traveling. You cannot dedicate yourself being fully at a customer service for 8 hours. You need to have more flexibility. That's why within the higher hierarchy of the consultants, you are likely to meet males rather than females, because once females reach a certain age, they like drop out. And we are trying to understand if there is anything that we can do. And especially because of COVID, I think now, because the customers are more likely to accept the flexibility from the consultants, because they have seen that the service will not be affected, we are looking into offering some customers, like, can we offer some flexible working, especially for those who have become parents, not only mothers, but also fathers? Like, is there a room for that? Basically, we haven't found our answer yet. We did not get to the answer yet, but we are looking into, is there anything that can be done? Because at the moment, senior consultancy jobs are not for parents.
So you're saying that senior consultants aren't necessarily women. Is there also, as part of your research, are you finding that there's still that opportunity? Because I know some women that have had their children and then go into consultancy later on in their career and then progress to those senior or into those senior positions. So I think it is an option for women, but clearly we're seeing there's not enough women. So there's definitely an issue that needs to be addressed. But then also where some companies are now being more flexible with their maternity policies around being able to share between the man and the woman, or the partner, sorry, I should say. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that helps or how that plays out.
Yeah, there are a lot of changes happening, obviously, but even if some companies position themselves offering flexible shared maternity and paternity, I think the statistics in terms of paternity is still very poor. Like, I think at the moment, well, I don't know exact numbers, I'm not going to lie, but most of the companies, if they offer paternity, they only offer paternity for 2 weeks, which is like, what is it? What is 2 weeks? You can take annual leave. Yeah, exactly. And changes are happening, but they're not happening at the pace that it needs to happen. And to your point that a female can come back after they take the maternity leave and go back to the senior levels of consultancy, of course they can do that. But the industry changes a lot. So if you take 1, 2, or 3 years out of the industry, then it means you've missed out a lot and you need to catch up really quickly, especially if you're at senior levels. And it's not only at cybersecurity. I believe in many industries, it's like that as well. And I think it's not only to do with like the maternity, it's just your lifestyle changes. You need to be flexible to pick up children after school or things like that. But if you're stuck at the customer side and you need to finish troubleshooting, you cannot just leave everything and go, or like at least this is what they expect from you. And there are a lot of problems like that, and it's just well, hopefully they will be addressed. But yeah, also it's all underpinned by the fact that there are not enough women overall.
Which hopefully that would change.
Hopefully. In fact, what would you say to women that are considering going into a career in cybersecurity? How would you encourage them to enter the market?
Yeah, good question.
I think it's a very rewarding industry. As I said, you don't need a degree or any prior knowledge. If you're a good learner, quick learner, good learner, professional, and easy, able to easily adapt to changing environments, you can be good enough for cybersecurity, and you can learn, you can literally learn anything that you need at your employers. Your employer can help you to do that. So in terms of entering the industry, it's a very rewarding, because the industry itself will give you everything that you need to have to be a good consultant. In terms of entering specifically consultancy, I think it's very individual. Like, there are some people who hate talking to customers and some people who enjoy it. So you just need to understand if this is something that you like. The benefit of the cybersecurity consultancy is that it's not purely working with people, because before I joined this role, I thought that I'm very bad at working with people. Like, I thought I'm a human technology person rather than human. But this particular industry is like half of the time you work with the technology and half of the time you work with people. So it has that good balance if you think you might like one over the other. So you can test yourself if you want to.
Definitely. Just in terms of going back to, you know, the summers, like you said, you always made sure that you use your summers for internships and gaining work experience. How did you obtain that work experience and the internships? And in hindsight, would you have wished that you did some work experience in cybersecurity to have that insight, basically?
Yeah, of course, I wish I had some cybersecurity industry before. But like at that point, that has never even occurred to me that it might be entering that industry. So, I mean, I do not really have regrets that I didn't do cybersecurity internship, because I simply know I didn't even think about it. How did I get my internships was easy. I just went to the, jobs center or something like that at the university. So I was at UCL. So I went to our employment help center or whatever it was. And I was very lucky that at that time they had a very good program that was supported by either Santander or Barclays Bank, but by one of them. And basically they were sponsoring you to take an internship at a small organization. That was like perfect for me. And the small businesses would come to UCL, and there would be like a speed dating between the businesses and the students. And then whenever there is a match, we together with the business and student would apply an application to the bank to just prove that both of them would benefit from each other, and they would sponsor it. So I was very lucky. I got 12 weeks paid internship at the small startup. They were producing luxury games, like luxury chessboards, luxury like a card games cards. And the reason why they were interested in me is because I speak Russian and chess market Russian, like you know where it goes. And yeah, that was amazing because it was only the organization of two people. I learned a lot. I basically translated their whole website into Russian. It was my first ever experience with some sort of IT work because they had to understand how WordPress works. So I built a whole new website in WordPress in Russian and worked with like private members events, some marketing, some like operations. And yeah, and I think after year two, I found an internship just like by looking into one of the job websites. So I don't really remember struggling as a student finding an internship. I think if you're looking for one, you can easily find it.
Especially if you go for the smaller boutique firms, yeah. As you said. And as you said as well, it's more, I feel like you get a better hands-on experience and they're more attentive towards you, yeah. Because there's less of you. So I personally would definitely be looking into that as well.
Any other general advice that you could give to people just in terms of their career, things that you've learned along the way, or any great advice that you've been given?
Yeah, I think one of the advice that I probably use myself is if you are not sure what you want to do, basically when I was graduating and I didn't really know what to do because all of these problems with immigration and me not wanting to go to corporate, I literally listed out all the things that I might potentially be interested at and tried every single thing on that list. So just to give you an example, I thought I'm interested in arts and wanted to go to like Sotheby's to like all this art curating whatever course. And before I spent tons of money on that, my friend gave me an advice, like try and go to the smaller gallery, just like work for them for a month and see if you like it. So I got an internship in a small gallery. I spent there like 3 weeks. I hated it. And that's how I knew that I don't like it. So that was a very good experience. I don't regret spending those 3 weeks on that. So if you think that there is something that you might potentially like, but you're not too sure, definitely try hands-on. It can be anything. If you're not too sure if you like IT or cybersecurity, just like Google some of the courses or some hands-on practical tasks. I think there are like tons of them online, and just check if you like them or not. Reach out to people on LinkedIn. Like on LinkedIn, the community is really good. Literally anyone is able to help and like go on a 15 or 20 minutes call with you, speak to you about. Yeah, I think reaching out to people, trying different experiences is like my top advice.
Great advice. Yeah. And I think that point around trying different things, even like dipping your toe in initially, yeah. Rather than overcommitting, at least you can get a good feel for it. So yeah, that was really helpful advice. I think now what we'll do is we'll lead to wrapping up. And what we normally do with our guests is we have some phrases, which I'll start and then we ask you to complete.
Sure.
So the first one is success to me means.
Success to me means inner balance.
Could you elaborate a bit on that?
I think you cannot be successful if you are like, if you're too stuck on something. So whatever your life priorities are, let's say your priorities are having hobbies, having a successful career and having a family, unless you are sort of on balance on all of them, you cannot be happy.
Cool. Great. Thank you. And then the next one is, I wish I had known.
I wish I had known that cybersecurity is such a great industry since year one of university.
Excellent. And then the last one, actually, I think I jumped the gun a bit and I've asked you this already, but you might have a bit more advice to share. So the last one is the best advice I could give.
Yeah, so yeah, I already gave an advice of trying different things. Yeah, and I think I can elaborate more on reaching out to people because I think when you are not too sure yourself, you can be quite shy of reaching out to people and speaking to people. But sometimes, even if you tell someone, look, I'm interested in this, but I have no idea, like, do I want it? Is it difficult? What it is like? Like, I'm completely lost. And people would be willing to help. And as I said, reaching out to people on LinkedIn is very effective. Just like, I don't know, if you think that you're interested in cybersecurity, but you do not really know what it is, just like type on LinkedIn, like cybersecurity professionals, message 20 people and at least a couple of people will respond, and then you can speak to them. Even like when I got my job offer in cybersecurity, I was still not quite sure if it is for me, and I found on LinkedIn some graduate from UCL which studied the same course that I did but graduated a little bit earlier, and she was doing cybersecurity. So I messaged her even if we never met, and then we met for a coffee. We discussed all the potential careers that I can pursue within cybersecurity, and that was really helpful. So yeah, definitely reach out.
Yeah, excellent. It's amazing how kind of I think people in general, we're often a bit nervous or anxious to reach out to people and ask, but it's amazing how people are so willing to help when you do actually ask. And if you don't ask, you don't get. So make sure you ask. Okay, great. So I think, would you like to share with the audience where they can find you on socials, and then a bit about your podcast as well, actually? Would be great.
If you have any questions about cybersecurity or anything related to like jobs or careers, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'll be more than happy to help. And for those who might be Russian speaking within your audience, I also have a podcast in Russian that is aimed at the personal and professional development. And we touch all different sorts of topics, starting from your career development, what skills you need to get in order to get into IT industry, and just any personal development stuff. So yeah, you can find it on podcasts platforms. It's called Mata.
Excellent. And then with that, where it's recorded in Russian, do you know if there's any software which converts it to other languages?
That's actually very interesting. I don't think there is anything like that.
Because I imagine like people would find that content really useful if it could be translated, even transcripted potentially to something. Maybe
I think there are apps that try to transcript it into like notes so that you can save it, but I don't think it's translated.
Okay, cool. All right then, well thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, Akmaral. Really appreciate you taking the time to do this with us and share the insight with our audience. That's it from us. Thank you everyone for tuning in. Goodbye from myself, Hannah.
Thank you everyone for tuning in.
Akmaral.
Thanks a lot for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
Great. Thank you. And see you on the next podcast. Cheers.